I'm reading in James 3, 1 through 12. Not many of you should become teachers, my fellow believers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. We all stumble in many ways. Anyone who is never at fault what they say is perfect, able to keep their whole body in check. When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as example. Although they are large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it takes great boast. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and itself set on fire by hell. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and sea creatures are being tamed and have been tamed by mankind. But no human can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth came praise and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? And my brothers and sisters, can fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water.
Thank you, Francis. If you have your Bible and want to turn to James 3, that's where we will be this morning. You know, it has been a pattern, if I can find a little story written by a young lady battling cancer to do so. I couldn't find one to fit this morning. So let me tell you another story as we begin. Just this past week, a very popular, well-known, what we would call Christian apologist, that is someone who sees their role as giving a defense of the Christian faith. That's really what the word apology is. It's not someone who's a professional person that goes around saying, I'm sorry. A Christian apologist is someone who takes the arguments that are offered, say, against the existence of God or, against Christian ethics or any number of really faith claims, and it assembles through one method or means, a defense. And this particular individual got up and spoke at a conference, and he said some very hurtful things. And in response to that, he received quite a bit of criticism, as you can imagine. And he could have said, well, you just didn't hear me right, which is kind of where we are today. That when we say something, it's generally because someone didn't hear what I was trying to say. Just a day or two later, he issued a statement. And he said, I was terribly wrong in what I said. In fact, I'm going to step away from my role in my organization for a period of time. Another person is going to take my place, and I'm going to take some time to think about what it was I said that was offensive, and I'm going to make amends. He understood words do a work. Words do a work. It'll be something to remember this morning. Let's pray together. Father of lights, who gave us birth by the word of truth, had it not been for your word of grace, of forgiveness, James informs us we would all be condemned by our own words. So this morning, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be pleasing in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer, and all God's people say. Preach the gospel at all times, and when necessary, use words. For at least the last 30 years, I'm aware of, this quote has been used to emphasize the need for Christians to actually be Christian in what we do, in support of what we say. In other words, let's do what we talk about. Ed Stetzer, who's now the director of the Billy Graham Center at Wheaton College, he holds the esteemed chair, the Billy Graham Distinguished Chair of Church Mission and Evangelism at Wheaton. He some years ago took up the task to find out, did St. Francis, to whom those words, that statement is attributed, did he really say that? Did St. Francis really say, preach the gospel at all times, and when necessary, use words? Maybe Ed, who is one of we preacher types, saw the weight of Francis's words and thought, man, if this is true, I could be out of a job. I mean, if too many people follow Francis' logic, then, like, what do we need preachers for? And what Stetzer discovered is that there is no citation, nowhere could anyone find anything that Assisi was said to have said, nor anywhere where he wrote, preach the gospel at all times, and when necessary, use words. In fact, he discovered that St. Francis was actually quite the preacher, quite a prolific preacher. So it would have been quite interesting for Francis to have actually made a statement that undermined one of his favorite things to do, that is, to give the good news. Kind of funny. Funny to think that a preacher would have said, we don't need words. I mean, those of us who really want to follow some words of St. Francis, those same ones who want to attribute this statement to him, I've never seen anyone really eager to take his vow of poverty. Kind of ironic. We want preachers to be quiet, and we want to keep all that we have. We're always pretty selective in what we do. But you know what? I got to thinking about this phrase that I've heard, this citation alleged to have been attributed to St. Francis, and I thought, well, its popularity means something. I mean, even if someone else made it up, the fact that people are paying attention to it has to have captured someone's imagination, had to evoke some sort of deep sense that it's really saying something that I believe or that I feel. Mostly it's young people and a few older folks who've latched on to this statement. I think what they're really rejecting is the idea of a words-only form of faith, something that we just talk about and there's no doing. Maybe what Francis was really doing, should he have said that, or whoever made up what Francis is supposed to have said, really is trying to reframe or restate or remake something James said 12 centuries before. But be doers of the word and not merely hearers who deceive themselves. James's words, those like those that were ascribed to St. Francis, remind us all of our own lack of consistency between our words and our deeds, what we say and what we do. Particularly, we're talking about Christians. It doesn't really do us any good to assess someone outside the faith, someone who's not committed to the faith, to point to their inconsistency. That's not James's audience. That's not James's point. His call for us to do what we say, to do what we've heard, to do what we've heard implanted in us, the word of truth that God has given us, the living word, Jesus, to do that. That is James's interest for us. Not just me, not just you, and not just people we want to point to and say, boy, they really don't do what they say. 21 centuries ago, and what James has said still has like import for us, doesn't it? I mean, here, when Josh McDowell spoke at that conference recently, and he said some things about a group of people, maligning them, blaming them, only to discover how hurtful and harmful his words had been, he needed to take into account, maybe I need to be careful with my words. So I'm going to go think about my words. I mean, if this, the popularity of this phrase has lingered and continues to linger and is repeated over and over again and has for so long, it at least seems that what James is after is something that's always with us. I mean, if Jesus said or repeated what we find in Deuteronomy, that the poor would always be with us because we'd fail to do what we need to do, maybe the reason why we find these words so captivating is for 21 centuries it's been difficult for us to say what we, to do what we say. So there's two things that seem to be clear, at least from what James is saying here, that Jesus kept his words in his works. Jesus kept his words in his works. And Christians through the centuries find that a very difficult task. Jesus kept his words in his works. Christians through the centuries have found that a difficult task. I mean, it may be why someone has repackaged James' words and attributed them to St. Francis in order for them to gain a hearing. That is, if someone noted to be important and significant, like the patron saint of Italy or the figure after whom every October 4th people take their animals to a priest to be blessed, maybe what they're after is to use St. Francis's name for a hearing, when what we really need to be reminded is how he wrote to us in chapter 2, faith without works is dead. My friend Pete, I don't know how old he is because he won't tell us. So I'm assuming he's a bit younger, but he could be a lot older, because you know what happens when we get older. We don't want anyone to know our age. But Pete offers a parable along these sorts of lines. And the conclusion or the upshot of his parable is this question: is there enough evidence to convict you or me of being Christian? I hope you caught that. It's not, is there enough evidence to convict you or me of being a Christian? But is there enough evidence to convict you or me of being Christian? There is a difference. It's easy for us to fill out a poll questionnaire that asks if we're a Christian and say, yes, I am a Christian. It's another thing to say, are you being Christian? It's a matter of, are we doing what we're saying? I have to tell you that not much has changed since the first time I heard the first speaker use this phrase. We've used it here. In fact, until Ed had come out with his research, which was one of his expertises, we thought St. Francis said it. Nathan's used it, I've used it, Brad's used it, Rusty. All of us have referred to St. Francis. It's still a sentiment that we feel. When are we going to do what we say? See, we always seem to live with the condition of our own lack of consistency, we Christians. But there's something that's changed, some observable change, something that's different about this difference between us not doing what we are saying. I want to suggest that today it's a little bit different. Today, I'm not sure the issue isn't with what we're saying. That today, It's not so much, or it's not only a difference between what we are saying and what we're doing, but there's an awful lot out there today. A lot of things said by us that don't sound like Jesus at all. Don't sound anything like anything Jesus would ever say to anyone. So maybe James points to something deeper than that. Maybe while he is the one who said, "But be ye doers and not merely hearers," maybe in chapter 3, James is going to push us even further. Maybe James is going to get at the heart of the issue of our doing, and that our doing is somehow connected actually with our words. I mean, James reminds his readers that if we get our words wrong, our practices follow our wrong words. You get some time this afternoon, read that passage again, all 12 verses, chapter 3, and see if you don't find James emphasizing the fact that what we say impacts what we do. In other words, there has never really been a place where our practices could be separated from our words. For what comes out of the mouth, Jesus said, is what we would be measured by. We'd either be measured and justified, or we would be measured and condemned. And Jesus, in Matthew 12, that's what he says. He doesn't say you're going to be judged by the things you've done. He says, but by the words that come out of your mouth. Why? Because the things we say are the things we do. Now, I know that sounds contradictory to St. Francis, and we don't want to contradict St. Francis. But remember, St. Francis never said that. But see, for James, what we say is a work. And that's what's confusing to us. But that's exactly what James builds in his argument in chapter 3, that our words are work. R.G.V. Tasker, New Testament professor in London, some decades ago, happened on this. It gets repeated in modern commentaries. James is telling us that our words are works. Our words do things. Our words mean things. Our words influence what we do with our bodies. I mean, take how he begins chapter 3. Anyone who makes no mistakes in speaking is perfect, able to keep the whole body in check. Wow, huh? The word here translated with the phrase keep the whole body in check is the verb form for the word bridle that he'll use in his illustration just to follow. In other words, if we can make no mistakes in speaking, then we're able to bridle the body. That is, we're able to control what our body does. Or in other words, our body will reveal what we're saying to be true. We're capable of keeping our bodies from doing things it shouldn't do because of our words. I mean, James is setting us up with the very words to indicate that any human being able to make no mistakes in speaking has learned how to bridle the body. I mean, if you and I are able to control what we say, what comes out of us, it will have an impact on what we do. I mean, we tend to emphasize the sins we commit without giving attention to what's in us. In other words, we spend a whole lot of time judging what others do before looking inward to see what's in us. Remember, Jesus is the one who said it's what is in us that defiles us. What's in us, already in us. So James, it seems like he clearly listened to his brother. Oh, for brothers that listen to their brother. That's what Paul tells me all the time. Yeah. I mean, what is happening in James's church? What's happening in churches scattered around Rome, and what often happens in churches today, and what the world notices with ease, is that we tend to use our words to judge others without judging our own words. We tend to judge others without judging our own words. Listen, if we thought the Apostle Paul had a low view of human beings, that the power of sin is more than we can personally handle on our own, James says to Paul, "Hold my drink." He says, "But no one can tame the tongue. No one, not one, none of us, none." I mean, these days we're so convinced of our perfect speaking, like I mentioned earlier, that when our words create conflict, division, and rupture relationships, we offer a one-off, non-apology apology. "I'm sorry you took that the way I said it, in a way that I did not mean." The onus now is on the hearer. I mean, listen, it is true that we interpret what others say and do, but yet when confronted with our own words, the reminder from James that we're not always perfect in what we say might go a long way in reducing division and maintaining friendship. Words are works. Words do things. I mean, the Bible is a book about God's words, God speaking. We Baptists have long held that we're a people of the book, a book of words, a book of words about God, a book of words from God, a book of words of God. Words do things. We see Jesus' words do things. Take up your mat and walk. Go and show yourself to the priest. Arise, my child. We witness Jesus' words work. Our words work, but they often seem to work something different. Maybe it's because James has gotten to the point of our own issues. If anyone is able to speak perfectly, he has learned to bridle, or she has learned to bridle their whole body. And then he says, no human being can tame the tongue. None. Sounds an awful lot like Paul, who quotes Isaiah, "There is none righteous, no, not one." None? So what are we to do? I mean, what are we to do when we make this discovery, when James is accurate about how our words work and what they do and how powerful they are and the fact that they are like a bridle in a horse's mouth or a rudder of a great ship or a spark that catches a forest on fire? What are we to do? What St. Francis did? What St. Francis did after he had lived the life of a wealthy individual and had a great family business, once he renounced it and hung out as a beggar, once he had learned that there was a need to take care of others made in the image of God rather than just take care of himself, why, he started a few orders. He started what we would now today know as the Order of the Franciscans, the Sisters of St. Clair. He even founded a religious group for those who couldn't do much. St. Francis, the one that has said, you know, preach the gospel and when necessary use words, but he really didn't say that. He did lots of things. Today, if you've ever celebrated a live Christian nativity scene, he organized the first one in the 13th century. When it was all said and done, after he had tried to put an end to the Fifth Crusade, when he tried to do all that he could and found that the burden of the groups that he had established to serve others was needing a little organization, he retired from all of that. And toward the end of his life, we don't know much of what he said or what he did. He spent more time in seclusion I mean, that could be an option for us, right? Once we make the discovery that anything we say is really going to be full of inconsistency, and we're not going to do what we say, and we're not going to say even what Jesus said, that we can't bridle our tongues, no, not one, maybe we just become mute. Option. I mean, aren't there days you would just as soon look at someone and tell them to be quiet? I mean, like, why vocal cords? I mean, it's an option. If we come to the conclusion with James that we can't do anything about it, then maybe just being quiet is the thing to do. Just not say anything. I don't really think that's what James has in mind. I don't think that's his intent. I think James is still wanting people in the church to understand that his brother is who he said he was. And that if there is anyone who knew how to bridle his words so that his body produced the things that he said, it was Jesus. Now, what's that for us? Well, listen. Paul writes that God has given us Jesus. That is not just something that we can just fancifully say is, oh, that's a great Christian thought. It's real. That is, God has given to our account the faithfulness of Jesus. So while we may be unable to tame our tongues, Jesus showed that he could and that what it produced, and God gives that to you and me. Which means we experience grace and forgiveness every time we open our mouths. Every time. If no human being can tame the tongue, that means every time we speak, we are receiving God's grace and forgiveness, because even when we accidentally get it right, there are more times we don't. James says so. And if we can be reminded, and if the Christians scattered around Rome can be reminded, and every Christian can be reminded that about the time you get ready to speak, you're experiencing God's grace and forgiveness, maybe then we will lean on trust the Spirit in us. Because that's really the only means whereby our tongues can be tamed. Maybe every day we need an event in our own lives, our lives individually and collectively, where the Spirit falls on us and gives us the things to say. It happened at Pentecost. It happened in episode after episode in the Acts of the Apostles. It happens over again in the letters that we have received that are in our scriptures. We need to trust that God will speak through us. Because left to ourselves, we're always going to need grace and forgiveness. Now that sounds really good, doesn't it? And we take that for ourselves. And we ought to be ready to give it to others. Grace and forgiveness for their words. For theirs. I don't know what will happen with the Christian apologist. Don't know if he'll take over as CEO again. Don't know if he'll say the things that he said ever again. But I sure know what I'm prone to do. I know what I'm prone to do with my words. And I know what I'm prone to do from time to time in using my words in ways that are less than constructive. I hope I'm not alone in the room. And what the world needs to see with ease is not that we're saying anything different than what Jesus said. Not that we're doing things different than Jesus did, but that we're living a life of God's grace and forgiveness and willing to express that in a way where our words are our works. Our words work, they do things. And we'll need to depend on the Spirit of God to give us those gracious, forgiving words. Now, I wanted to tell you something. I don't know of another group that gets together anywhere. I don't know a sports team on any level. A men's club, a women's club, a business of any size gets together and says, we want to bear witness to God's grace and forgiveness with our words. But the church, all churches, our church, should be a place where week to week we get together and say, every time we open our mouths, God is being gracious and forgiving. And we will be to one another